This episode contains descriptions of domestic violence and the death of a child. Please take care while listening. The National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-7233, or you can visit thehotline.org. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, they can help with finding a shelter, counseling, legal help, and so much more. That number again is 1-800-799-7233. Vernetta Cockrum grew up in Jonesville, North Carolina, raised by her grandmother. But when it came time for high school, she decided to move to New Jersey, where she was born and where both her parents lived, to hopefully reconnect with them. Instead, she connected with someone else.
I was in summer school, and I was there as a tutor, you know, trying to get extra credit. And I was tutoring the football player, Kevin Faker. And he was just really popular, and, you know, and we connected.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's every, like, teenage nerd's dream to, like, tutor the hot football player.
Vernetta found out during that summer that she was pregnant. She and Kevin were young, but got married to try to make their family work.
I mean, he was really a good guy, and we did get married. And even though it didn't last long, we are still friends today.
But before they got to be friends, there was a reason they got divorced.
I met Richard through, he was dating my sister-in-law, and Kevin was cheating on me. And so Richard was the one who told me about him cheating on me. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we began to talk and become friends, and I went through my divorce, and he was still there for a moment.
But Richard wasn't someone Vernetta was really jazzed about.
I was noticing some things that Richard was doing that I didn't approve of.
Like what?
I didn't like that he would hang out and drink all the time. I wasn't a clubber. I wasn't somebody to hang out in bars. And, you know, we're talking, but you're moving things kind of fast. You know, you're being a little bit too close to me while we're going through my divorce. You know, but I'm still just being friendly because I do appreciate you letting me know and all these things. And, you know, now you're telling me, you know, you like me and all these other things. But
yeah, it's like too much.
Too much too soon.
Yeah.
Vernetta had been taking care of her mom during a long illness. When her mom passed, she decided to move herself and her daughter Candace to North Carolina to be closer with the rest of her family. She wanted a fresh start, but then
Richard showed up out of the blue.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
And it had been some months. And so when he called me, he was already in North Carolina when he called me. I was with some friends, and I just couldn't believe I was getting his call. He was calling me from the bus station in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And so my friend was like, yeah, okay, sure. We'll go down and pick him up. You know, he came all the way from Jersey. And my gut was just telling me, this is out the blue.
Yeah, he didn't call to tell you ahead of time. Right. He's just like, here I am, come get me.
Right. So before we left the bus station, I went in to talk to him. And I was like, why all of a sudden you're here?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you running from something? And he told me, he says, no, I just lost my youngest son. He passed away on Christmas Day. And I was like, wow. And I had spoke to the lady a couple of times, you know. And I was like, well, why aren't you with her?
Yeah.
like,
I'm so sorry.
Well, why?
But why are you here, though?
Here.
Vernetta allowed Richard to stay with her for a while. But then she heard a voicemail from the mother of Richard's child.
She was upset that he wasn't there to help her. She was upset that he left her just holding the bag emotionally. She was upset for all the things that I had questioned him about. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I was like, look, you got to go.
So does he go back to New Jersey?
No. That's when he professes that he loves me and he wants to stay.
How long had he been there at this point?
This was like maybe 4 or 5 months in.
Okay.
So I was like, well, to me, it was like, well, you then have to get a job.
Were you supporting him at this time?
Yeah.
Did you have feelings for him?
Yeah. I cared about him in a way that he would have to show me. He would have to build. Like, in other words, he would have to do better than what my ex-husband is doing. And he's not even with me.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a relationship right now. I've just had my heart broken. So when marriage came along, I was sort of surprised. We really wasn't on the intimate stage of things. But I felt like if we can live together and, you know, and you commit to me, like no more running in the street anymore. If we get married, then that's cut off, period.
Then Vernetta got pregnant.
It was, my children are 11 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
Having Rashik was another chapter. It was a new beginning. It was like, this is a chance to do it right.
And soon after their son Rashik was born, it became clear to Vernetta this wasn't going to be the stable situation she was hoping for.
He began to be more aggressive as far as like, I want you to be home on Saturday mornings. I want breakfast like we used to. When Rashik started school, it was like, he can't have any pork. There's no pork in the house. He was trying to make me convert into a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff started coming in out of nowhere.
Had he been violent towards you yet?
Not really. It was more like push or shove type of deal. Or
and very controlling.
Just controlling by the arm or, you know, a shove. Never a knockdown drag out at that time.
They had another son in 2002, but everything came to a head on the 4th of July that year as they were trying to leave for a family picnic.
Yeah, he had jumped on me, and we were in our bedroom, and Candace stepped in, and she just, you know, sort of just pushed him off of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he told her, you should have never interfered. It was spiraling out of control. And I was trying to de-escalate. And going to the car and trying to get him to just drive away and leave Candace, you know, with the kids. And then, you know, let's just get to the park and let's, you know, get set up. What I was trying my best to do was separate him from the house.
Mm-hmm.
In the car, I think he figured out what I was trying to do. And it pissed him off. I felt like, you were so angry that I'm not going to let this thing go and try to make it work. But we're trying to do this for the sake of the kids. That was the point that I was at that point. I don't want to be with you. You know, I don't want to be with you. But let's just put on this show for the kids. And before I knew it, Richard had done reached in the back and got that baseball bat. And when I looked and I seen it coming, I was like, you're not going to hit me with that. Bam. And he about twisted my face off. And I sat there for a moment. I had to gather my grip. I was dizzy when I stepped out of the truck, but I was making it to the house. He had already started telling Candace, it was an accident. It was an accident. And I'm going to tell you why he started telling Candace that it was an accident. Candace was 6'2". Candace could pick me up like she did that day, like a little baby.
No.
He said, I didn't do that because he didn't want to deal with that Candace. He left. Candace called the police and the ambulance got there and I tried not to go. Because at this point, I'm in defense of you having to call social services and me not having my kids. Just from that one incident. It's a scary situation. So the ambulance driver, he knew I had a concussion. I was declining to get into the ambulance until I knew my children were safe. But once I seen my auntie come get them, you know, I still was reluctant, but they sort of just got me onto the hospital anyway, because they needed to do their job. They needed to find Richard and charge him. So they did. While in the hospital, he had one of his coworkers come to the hospital and tell me that he was going to bail him out.
What did you say to that?
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
We've never known Richard to be violent. Really? You see this on my head?
Yeah.
He put that there. What kind of cockamamie story did he tell you? Did he tell you Candace did something to him? Because she didn't. She did not.
Yeah, I'm the one in the hospital and he's not. So I think you can put two and two together there.
Well, you know these male egos. Anywho. Okay. I got to get some protection.
3 months later, Richard pled guilty to misdemeanor assault with a deadly weapon. He was sentenced to 3 years probation, a condition of which was that he not harm or threaten Vernetta. If he did, he was supposed to go to jail for 120 days.
Shortly after that, he was in the driveway and he clipped me with the back end of his car. And I'm trying to walk away from the car, but I'm in the, between the tree and the car. So I can't move. And he just backs up. The tree is here, so I have no anywhere to go. So he clips me on the back end of his car, and then the mirror catches me back in the hospital. So they put, I think it is 250 feet away from me on the next charge. So that means he had to stay further away.
But part of his probation from the bat incident was that he had to stay away from you. And if he didn't, he would go back to jail, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he never goes back to jail. Why was that?
Clearly, it took my attorneys to tell me this. And they sat me down because I kept screaming, why? Why? Because you're Black, Vernetta. And this is a racist town.
And it kept happening. Vernetta had gotten a temporary restraining order on top of his probation conditions in Yadkin County, North Carolina. At that time, she worked just across county lines in Surrey County. Then, on November 2nd...
He comes to Quiznos, is where it was. I was trying to hide out in this little shopping center and work where I could. And but, you know, in those type of places, you have young kids. So once Richard started calling and I sent him in the parking lot, I sent the kids home. I started calling my manager because, you know, it just seemed like he was just getting ready to make my life hell that day.
So Richard is in the parking lot of her work. Vernetta has sent her teen coworkers away and is now all alone in the store.
I call the cops. And the cops don't have a copy of the restraining order. I tell them that I have a copy of the restraining order. Can you please have him removed? And they tell me that I have to have a restraining order for Surrey County. No, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Now, to verify, you can call Yadkin County to verify my restraining order. And if it's up to date, I get that. Okay, but...
I'll wait while you make that call.
Right. He stuck with, you know, getting that restraining order at that time faxed over.
And they don't come. This is all over the phone.
This is all over the phone.
We'll be right back. So Richard is outside in the parking lot, and Vernetta is on the phone with the police department in Surrey County, trying to convince them to enforce the protective order she has in Yadkin County.
The Surrey County never dispatches a cop. So I call my manager and I tell her that I'm going to lock up. It's time for me to close. And I don't know what's going to happen to me. I'm talking to the cops. They can't help me. I leave out. I try to get to my car. He snatches me up. And it's like the way he snatches me up is like military style. Okay. And it's to where one arm is behind my back. Mm-hmm. This arm is clipped by the elbow right here. So it looks like he's holding me, you know, and just walking with me like a couple.
Mm.
But you're not. You're literally having me strained. So I'm walking and I'm trying to show that I'm being restrained because I'm now on my tippy toes. I'm on my tippy toes. He puts me in my vehicle, leaves his vehicle parked there, and basically makes me drive to his house. I don't care where you live at. I don't want to know where you live at.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do have is my 9 up under my seat.
Her 9 being a 9mm handgun.
Okay. So I'm trying to get my confidence together, you know, and I'm talking, you know, like I'm not, you need a ride home or something. I seen your car. This is, you know what this is about. Shut up. Da da da.
Yeah.
Well, when he gets out the car at his house, which he makes me pull into the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes to get me, but when he opens up the door, he meets me and my gun. Now, granted, I'm scared. I don't want to have to shoot the father of my children. I don't want to do this. So I'm trying to back him up with the gun. I'm trying to scream for help. I'm telling the neighbor that he's kidnapped me from my job. Please help me. Please call the cops. Call the cops right now. I have a restraining order. He's kidnapping me. Before I knew it, he just done smacked me, took away my gun, threw it in the daggone woods, and ran me into a brick wall. Because he ran me into to the side of the house and then took my head and scraped it down. This right here was too bone, all of it.
Oh.
And I was just burning. I was just burning. And so when he put my face in the dirt, it was almost like a relief. It was almost like, because the dirt was cold and it was dirt, it was sort of like he sealed it up. So
yeah.
Then I was like, get off me, because he was still on my back, as to say, I have her. And he was calling the police. He was like, I have her. She came over here to try to kill me. Da 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 da. And I was like, oh my God, he set me up. So the police come from Jonesville, and it's Officer Payne, and he's one of the good ones. And he was like, I brought the restraining order. So even with the restraining order, Surrey County arrested me and put me in jail.
Even with the Jonesville cop being like, no,
yeah,
she's the victim here.
Mm-hmm.
They said they don't care.
They really didn't take care of me at the hospital. So when I got ready for court, I unwrapped myself 48 hours later with no medical attention. Mm-hmm. And so it got infected. It was god awful. And so when I went to court in Surrey County, he was there. And he was like, I didn't do that. And by that time, the judge looked at me and he just was like, get her out of those handcuffs now. He had Richard locked up immediately. The judge was looking at the paperwork and he was talking to both of the attorneys. And he told him, he said, come here. And he took the papers and he threw them at him. And it it let me know that I know that what they did to me was just wrong.
So the charges against Vernetta were dropped, and Richard was charged with assault.
I began to call my district attorney, and I began to talk to him about how I needed serious help and how the police are not really aware of domestic violence laws. They're not enforcing them. And so I needed to begin to get that out there in order to get safe some kind of way. And they were like, just leave. And I was like, you can go where? Because I'm home.
Not to mention that Vernetta's house was about 100 yards from the police station.
Well, go to a shelter. What shelter? The one that's a grown stone away from his house with no trees, no barriers, no nothing. Are you kidding me? Like, well, that's all we have. I can't do that. Then again, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm desperate. Let me just go and just give this a try.
But when she got to the shelter, they told her,
yes, Ms. Cockrum, you and your 9-month-old can be in this room, but then your 7-year-old has to be down the hall in this room, and your daughter, she can't stay here at all.
Why couldn't Candace stay there?
She was too old. She had to be under 16.
Well, what are 17-year-olds supposed to do? They still are minors.
Family, friends. So that isn't work out. I didn't spend one night in there.
And who is someone else in, like, the room with Rasheek when he's not with you?
Either he's going to be by himself or he's going to be with other little boys. Okay? And if you're 7, I don't want you in the same room with somebody I don't know that's the age 10 or 11.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
Also, the shelter was closer to where Richard lived than Vernetta's house.
Man is going to try to get to me. He'll go through anybody to get to me. So I'm redrawing more attention to this place. I'm not hidden. This is on the main street. When he pulls out of his driveway, his first main street, and it's only maybe 4 or 5 businesses down, and then the shelter's right there.
Yeah.
My car's right there. It's not hidden. He can see it. He knows I'm there. He knows my license plates. I mean, really, that's just not negotiable at all.
And what is the protection exactly other than being in a house where he would supposedly not know where you were? Like, is there a cop there all the time?
Nope.
Right. So I'm moving. You want me to move closer to him where he can easily find me? I can't sleep in the same room with both my children. My daughter can't come at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this is good.
Mm-hmm.
In the November 13th hearing to revoke Richard's probation, the judge did extend Vernetta's protective order to 1 year, but did not find that Richard had violated the terms of his probation. Even Richard's probation officer thought Richard should go to jail. So, having faced no consequences for his actions, Richard decided to dig graves for Vernetta and her children in the field across the street from her house. He then left a message on her answering machine saying, "You and the kids will be in those graves and no one will ever know." She once again called the police.
Officers aren't supposed to give you legal advice. But Chief Robbie Coe at that time understood that the investigator and detective that was held those positions wasn't doing their job. They didn't really reach the way they should have with me. But the chief, he had his back up against the wall. But at the same time, he was like, we need to get in contact with the district attorney. That's the only person that's really going to make these people do the job.
Richard, once again, was not arrested. November 18th, 5 days after their last hearing, Richard went to their son's daycare in violation of the protection order. Vernetta once again went to the police, who told her to go to the magistrate and get an arrest warrant herself. So she did. On her way to the police station to drop off the warrant, Vernetta saw Richard following her closely in his truck. At a red light, she spotted a police car and flagged down Officer Scotty Vestal. Richard drove off, and the officer said he didn't see that it was Richard driving the truck and took no further action. In the evening that same day, that same officer and Sergeant Timothy Gwynn were talking to Vernetta in her front yard. Richard drove by as they were all standing there. Vestal and Gwynn went after him and promised Vernetta they would arrest him. However, they once again did not arrest Richard.
And he never came back that day and said he's not locked up. So that next morning, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was like, okay, he's locked up. I can finally just not have to be looking over my shoulder while I'm taking the kids to daycare and to school. I don't have to do that. All right, Candace, it's time. I called the school. We're going to set up an appointment. We're going to talk to the Army recruiter today. You know, those type of things are going to start getting done.
So Vernetta thinks Richard is in custody. She can finally breathe easy. She dropped Candace at the library to make copies of her documents for the meeting with the Army recruiter. Vernetta then ran a quick errand and went back to the library to grab Candace, but Candace wasn't there. Vernetta thought she might have walked home.
So when I went to the house, the door was ajar, and I slowly walked in. Well, when I walked in, the screen door slammed behind me a little. There was stairs in front of the front door that led to the second floor. And then when you walked straight into, the door had to be pushed all the way back. And then there was Rashik's room. And then behind Rashik's room was Candace's room. And before I could turn the corner, Richard came out of Candace's room and told me that he had killed her. And Candace is dead, and now I'm going to kill you. I let that sink in for all of about 2 seconds. And I began to try to fight my way to the room. But he already had, like, knives and zip ties laid out. So when he would lose the grip on one knife, he would just reach back and grab another one. So I backed myself up all the way into the living room where I had a planter that on each shelf was made of that really thick glass. So I put that in between me and him and I flipped it over. And when I flipped it over, glass broke everywhere. He was still trying to stab me. And while he was trying to stab me, I was holding the blades. And so every time he would pull back out, it was like barbed wire because they were steak knives. So I could just feel the every little grind across my bones and my hands and until I just could look down and just see flesh and nerves. And this went on for 20 minutes, this fight. This was a long fight. Like, I'm not making it really easy for you to continue to keep stabbing at me.
Yeah.
So he goes around me and he starts stabbing me in my head. I'm keeping my eyes as covered as possible. So the back of this hand is sliced up. I know soon if I don't get out that he's gonna kill me. So I started crawling from up under it, trying to get out the door. He snatches me back and then he starts choking me, and I'm still not dying fast enough for him. And he picks up this butcher knife and he just slices my throat, and I can just feel the blood just running down my neck to the back of my back. And I looked at him and I told him, Jesus will save me. And I passed out. When I came to, I thought I heard Candace calling my name. Hey, Ma, Ma, Ma. And so I got up And I realized what I went through wasn't a dream. This is really happening.
But luckily, Richard was gone.
So I hear Candace, but it's almost like she's on the other side of the door now. Like, okay, you know, I gotta get out. I can't get out. There's blood everywhere, so my hands and arms keep slipping from all the blood. And so finally I get it cracked and I just get out. And I just shoot for the police station across the street as fast as I can. And I can hear the whistles in my skin from the wind blowing on it. And I just was like, I gotta make it. So I get to the door of the police station and I drop right there. And Chief Coe is there and he's trying to get all this blood and somehow under control. And so he gets these big pads and he's laying them on me. And he was like, who did this to you? And I remember looking at him like, you know who did this to me. And then he's like, well, I need to hear you say it. So I told him, Richard did this to me. Where are my kids? Gotta get my kids. I can't find Candace. Where's Candace? So the ambulance gets to me. I pass out again. I'm dead on arrival. When I read that in my hospital records, I really had to look out at it. I was literally dead. For 25 minutes, they worked on me.
They stitched up her wounds, but the one on her neck was particularly fragile. When she regained consciousness, all she wanted to know about was her kids.
People was coming in and they were told by the doctors that you can't tell her about anything. You can't say anything to her because if she busts that stitch in her neck, we can't repair it because we don't have anything else to repair it by.
Yeah.
So everybody was told that they couldn't tell me about Candace and not anything that was going to upset me other than what has happened to me already.
Yeah.
And so I remember my grandmother coming to me and I asked her, I said, you can tell me where Candace is. Where's my kids? And she said, Candace is all right. The boys will be okay. But she separated Candace from the boys. But I could tell something wasn't quite right. And then on the second day, they had to tell me. And that was one of the roughest days of my life. Because the doctors told me, Renata, you can't cry, you can't scream, you can't let your emotions get bottled up in your throat. And it was like a 30-minute talk of what I could not do. But I had to go to the morgue to see her. And the toughest thing was not being able to scream or cry. It made me angry. No, mother. On earth should I have to hold in that?
We'll be right back. Richard had fled back to New Jersey and managed to evade police until November 22nd, when he went to East Side Park, doused himself in gasoline, and lit himself on fire, dying by suicide.
I think it was justifiable. It was justifiable than him taking the risk of going through the system again.
Yeah. Do you wish he had gone through the legal justice system?
No. Mm-mm. No, because I think the whole time that we would probably be going through trial, I would probably be putting my kids in a safe place and I'd be going to jail.
Going to jail for what?
Murder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I would have took him off this earth.
Not only did Vernetta lose her oldest child and had been violently attacked herself, Child Protective Services took her two sons and put them in foster care after the attack.
Emotionally, I was a wreck. I didn't know what to do without my kids. My kids were my daily life. They made me confident in knowing what I was doing. I'm not a neglectful mother, and so that's the process that they put me on. They put me on a neglected mother. I never neglected my kids. You never had one investigation about me neglecting my kids. Well, you can't go back to the house with your children. I already have a house that I'm staying in already. It's my father's house. He's in Canada. I'm living in his house. So I already have a place to stay.
Yeah.
Is the water on? Yeah, the water's on. Electrical, too. Okay, well, I'm pretty sure you're on medications. Well, you know what? They tell me that I should be, but I'm not, because I know that you're going to drug test me in order to get my kids back.
What kind of medications?
Just pain medications. I still had stitches that need to be taken out. I still had staples that need to be taken out.
Yeah.
I take no drugs. Once my system was cleared from the hospital, no drugs, because just one failed drug test could make me not see my kids. They was only trying to allow me to see my kids one day out of a month. And she told me that I should have been grateful to get that. I don't understand.
I didn't do this.
Exactly. It was horrible.
How long were they away from you?
Less than 30 days. I had to take them and do and comply with everything, like parenting classes. Like, it was unnecessary. Parenting classes was absolutely unnecessary.
Yeah.
But they made me go through it anyway, because that's their just status quo type of BS.
While Vernetta was given physical custody of her children, the state retained legal custody, which meant they would make all the decisions about education and health for Vernetta's boys. So she went from living in fear of Richard killing them to the fear of social services taking them for good.
Making me go to the hospital and give drug tests for 5 years. I would have to put my kids through therapy for 5 years.
Losing his big sister, who he looked up to, his father, and then being taken from his mom when he probably needed her the most, really affected her older son, Rishik.
When I get my Shiki back, he never was the same.
What was he like after?
My son would hold my face, hug me, love me. You could just tell in his eyes that I know my mommy got me. When he came back, he barely would look at me. No more hugs. They had told him that losing his sister and dad was my fault.
Who told him that?
The social worker.
Oh my God.
The first time I heard her say it was when she made me say, to tell them, she made me say it was okay to leave with these people. And I didn't want her to do it. And she called the sheriff's department and made me do it or go to jail. I swear. Mm-hmm. He never forgot that.
Yeah.
And what she took away from him was his innocence. It hurt my heart that he had to go through that. You know, but he stuck by his little brother, and he wouldn't allow them to split him from his brother.
On the 2-year anniversary of Candace's murder, Vernetta filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the town of Jonesville and the police department. Legal precedent had been set in a case out of Colorado that police had discretion whether or not to enforce a protection order. Vernetta's lawyers argued that because the two officers at her house as Richard drove by promised her they would arrest him, they should be held liable.
You gotta know you can't promise me something unless you guarantee that you can do it.
Yeah.
You never say that. Like, you never promise anybody anything. Once you promise me something, it's a special relationship. And if your conduct is willful and wrongdoing, then that's what we're going to charge you with on your conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Officer Bessel, he is the reason why I've pushed hard on this lawsuit. Officer Bessel had just got out of law enforcement training. He was 19. He had just graduated high school a year before. He had known Candace. They went to school together. But Officer Vestal came to see me in the hospital, and he said to me, he should have never let him go. I said, he let him go? He said, I should have never listened to him. My heart was telling me not to listen to him.
To
his sergeant, Graham. The sergeant is telling him not to say anything. He's going to let Richard go.
Now, both Officer Scotty Vestal and Sergeant Timothy Quinn deny seeing Richard driving by and ever promising to arrest him. However, Jonesville Police Chief Robbie Coe said in a deposition that Sergeant Quinn told him he had seen Richard drive by Vernetta's house that evening and that they went after him but couldn't find him.
And then, as the story goes, it's during depositions where Quinn started flip-flopping. But Vestal's story always stayed the same. And I told him that not to quit the force. He just had gotten married. He was on his first child. His wife was still pregnant. And I told him, you hang in there. You're going to be a good officer because you feel. You're here at my bedside. And I told him that there's a bigger judge than the one that we're going to go before. And that's the one you know that I'm looking at for you.
Mm.
And so we had a understanding on what I didn't want to shake him as hard as I wanted Gwen. I wanted Gwen because he was walking around town like he ain't do nothing wrong.
Mm.
Y'all, and then they turned around and promoted him to lieutenant.
Not only that, but in 2004, the same year Vernetta filed that suit, Gwynn took over as Jonesville police chief after Coe resigned. Gwynn was police chief for 2 years before resigning because he was, quote, burned out by the politics, basically. The current police chief of Jonesville, North Carolina, is Scotty Vestal. The lawsuit dragged on for several years, and unfortunately, Vernetta's dealings with the police department weren't done.
And I had a check out there. It was a $7.42 check. And it was like it bounced. Which, my checks were good. All you had to do was send it back. But they never did. They kept your check. But after they kept it for years, because Winn-Dixie had closed up and moved away, there was no more Winn-Dixies. And they arrested me on that. And they came to my house with the warrant and said that I had to go downtown.
For $7.42.
Yes, 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 ma'am. And I told that young deputy, I said, you planning on putting them handcuffs on me and putting me in the back of your car? He said, yes. I said, no, that's not going to happen. I said, I'm going to tell you on my word that I'm getting my car and I'm going to drive to Yakubin myself. Because I will be dropping back this evening. So he got on the phone, and I don't know if he got a yes or a no, but I was already in my car on my way to Yakinville.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever remember getting any kind of paperwork from my bank that said that they wouldn't pay $7.42.
Yeah.
And so even my bank had written the statement that they never received anything of the such. They never ran a check. Not only that, while they were there, the SBI showed up.
That's the State Bureau of Investigations, like the FBI, but at the state level.
I mean, we're in a lawsuit,
yeah.
And you're turning around and you're charging me. You're harassing me. Yeah, they charged me with it, and I had to do community service. They made me wear that. So what they did was, with this fraud, supposedly on my record, it hurts you from getting a job in retail. It hurts. Like anything like that, it hurt for years and years and years.
The lawsuit went to trial, but one day in, they settled for $430,000. So while Vernetta got her justice, I mean, sort of, the Jonesville Police Department didn't admit any wrongdoing as part of the settlement, she put her energy back into helping others by becoming a victim advocate.
Because I felt like there hasn't been any change. The only way it's going to make change if I start breaking some rules. So once I started breaking some rules, like stepping into courts, stepping up to with the victim, and I would break down to them what the judge was saying. I would break down to them what the paperwork meant. Mm-hmm. The way to talk and the way to speak to a judge was very comfortable to me. And in some of my cases, they're thinking that I'm a lawyer, but I've never said I was a lawyer. I'm a domestic violence advocate.
But after all this time of loss and grief and giving of herself to other domestic violence victims, Vernetta is ready to take some time for herself.
What brought me to Delaware was absolute change in finding Vernetta. I was in motherhood. I was into my work family and into work. And I wanted to find me again. And I've been fortunate since I've moved to Delaware that finding me again has been okay. It makes me understand that I'm not such a bad person. Because you are told so much and you go through so much that you lose yourself. And you find yourself doing things for others. And so I got to a point where I was doing the conference at one point, and the ladies were like, "You're so busy." And they was reading off all the things that I've done and was doing. It was like, "Look, you take on a lot. Just like you, Miss Catlin. You hear a lot. At the end of the day, where do you put that at? Where does that go? Don't let that consume me." So I started to take that for reality and realize that I do want a chance to be Vernetta. And like I told my son, I'm not from North Carolina. I'm from New Jersey. I lived there because that's where my dad went. Hopefully, you know, maybe you'll come on up to Delaware. But for right now, North Carolina's not for me. I think I deserve to be away from that immediate outlook. I want to be able to enjoy life. So I came to Delaware. I'm working with a wonderful company I never thought I'd be working with, something globally and interesting, and then meeting new people. And being able to build from there is just grace. It's just grace.
Yeah.
And it feels good.
Yeah.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.